The year that the U.S. stock market first regained its 1929 pre-crash peak.
1954.
The price at a Reykjavik restaurant of a whale kebab called Moby Dick on a Stick.
$9.
Number of years the Harper's Index has been published.
25.
And to help us mark that milestone of what the magazine calls its statistical poem, we're joined by Harper's editor Roger Hodge. Mr. Hodge, statistical poem, explain.
Well, the index is a list of 40 statistics that are very artfully arranged. It's very compressed in the way that poetry is. I often think of it as a statistical poem.
And carefully arranged. Sometimes it seems like it may start with sort of more sobering statistics, and you'll end up on something, well, like Moby Dick on a Stick.
Exactly. And one of the things that we try to do is keep it surprising so that the reader doesn't really know what's coming next.
Well, 25 years ago, how did this all start?
The index was born from Lewis Lapham, my predecessor's observation that many newspaper articles are built around a number. And his thought was, why not boil it down to one line, one number, and try to convey a newspaper's worth of information on a single page?
And is it part of the mission of everybody at the magazine, basically, to be scouring articles for that one number, date, statistic that just makes you go, wow?
It's just part of our daily process. You're constantly noticing numbers or potential numbers or even just the shadow of a number that might be useful for the index. For example, for years we talked about how many fireflies would it take to equal the sun, and it turned out to be 14,286,000,000.
It does seem sometimes, if you read this carefully, that it's something that doesn't start with a number. It starts with something that's happened, and then you're almost working backward to figure out how you could attach a number to that.
That's exactly right. We brainstorm and we think, how can we quantify this? How can we compare Bush and Clinton? Well, one way to compare Bush and Clinton is to count the number of times Bush said I in his State of the Union addresses and compare that to the number of times Clinton said I in his State of the Union addresses. And you get 36 for Bush and 103 for Clinton.
You have, in honor of this 25th anniversary, you've put up a search engine of all the terms that have been in the Harper's Index over the years. And you can waste many good hours this way. But I did notice this. Back in 1986, percentage of Americans who say they find life dull, 6%. And coincidentally, the first statistic in the current issue, percentage of Americans who think their lives serve an important purpose, 94%. So really, nothing has changed since 1986. Those two numbers match up perfectly.
That's a great accidental juxtaposition. I mean, I don't think we necessarily knew we had done the opposite number, although we might have.
Is part of that juxtaposition, is it sort of to point out hypocrisy, to kind of be a little snarky sometimes?
Definitely. Sometimes it's celebratory, and sometimes we're definitely trying to twist the knife.
As you look back over these many thousands and thousands of entries over the years, is there one that really sticks in your mind as your all-time favorite?
Well, I guess my favorite number of all time is a very lighthearted number, which is the average number of peas in a pod.
Oh, what is it?
Eight.
Eight. Well, somebody's going to find that information very useful, I know.
I hope so.
Well, Roger Hodge, it's been fun talking with you about the Harper's Index. Happy anniversary.
Thank you.
Roger Hodge is the editor of Harper's. The Harper's Index is now 25. For decades, Americans sat in front of their televisions and just watched their favorite shows. Now, though, we want more. And much of what we want isn't on TV at all. It's on the internet. Interviews with the cast of Survivor, a blog by the Grey's Anatomy writers. NPR's Netta Ulaby has the story of a group of fans who've been interacting with TV shows for decades. They make unauthorized underground videos and call themselves vidders.
A vidder takes dozens of clips from various episodes of a TV show and edits them together to a song. The fan vid might suggest a story that never existed in the show. This vid takes scenes from the show CSI New York. It begins with depressing shots of rainy, trafficy streets, then switches to gritty crime scenes, ambulances, burning buildings. Her world has changed. She asked God why. Actor Gary Sinise, who plays the show's main detective, stalks, tight-lipped, through the carnage. The creators of CSI New York did not intend the show to be watched like this, cut wildly out of sequence to a song by the band Good Charlotte. But the vidder has his own agenda. He has something to say about the dangers faced by cops on the show, and he's saying it by cutting existing scenes together. This vid's got thousands of views on YouTube. It's one of untold millions of fan vids online.
Vidding is a way of seeing.
Professor Francesca Coppa makes vids, and she studies them. Coppa belongs to a community of mostly female vidders who avidly follow programs like Smallville and Stargate Atlantis. She says they crave subtler storylines, deeper characters. They use vids to create different stories from the ones they see on TV.
I think women are having to kind of supplement mass media culture with their own ideas or fill in the blanks themselves for things that they're not getting from the mainstream culture.
The story of vidding is a story of people mastering technology to respond to shows they love. Coppa says vidding began back in 1975 when a fan named Candy Fong showed a slideshow at a Star Trek convention. She took shots of Spock laughing, scowling, and otherwise struggling with his half-human, half-alien nature and matched them to a song recorded by Leonard Nimoy. Vids became vastly more sophisticated. Francesca Coppa says vidders evolved with technology in the 1980s and 90s.
When the home VCR came out, fans would tape everything that they loved. And then they started using two VCRs to edit footage together, which is, by the way, extremely difficult.
Back then, fans sent each other vids in the mail. Now anyone can download cheap digital editing software and remix their favorite TV shows.
I care about these characters. It's very much a communal experience.
Vidder Rachel Sabatini says the internet expands that communal experience, but it makes vidders vulnerable to big media companies that own copyrights to the music and shows. It's not unusual for YouTube to remove fan vids without warning.
Notice and takedown is probably what we've heard the most about recently.
Rebecca Tushnet is a Georgetown Law School professor.
And I'm an occasional vidder myself, but not a very good one.
Tushnet's part of a group called the Organization for Transformative Works. It advocates for the rights of vidders like Rachel Sabatini.
I think that we have that right to be able to transform and reimagine.
Sabatini says vidders aren't pirates. They're not trying to make money. In fact, they're notoriously willing to shell out for expensive DVD sets that provide the most beautiful source material for their vids. And they're known for turning their friends into fans. Such organic buzz marketing leads to some corporate schizophrenia, says vidder Francesca Coppa.
You might have a marketing department of your company might be running a let's make vids to promote the show contest while the legal department of the same company is tossing vids off the internet.
But fan vids are finding significant mainstream recognition, even from museums. One's on display right now at the California Museum of Photography. It's by a rising vidding star, a 27-year-old British woman who vids under the name Lim.
They made a statue of us.
The vid uses music by Regina Spektor. It's about what it means to be a fan. In it, Star Trek bleeds into X-Files and The Dark Knight. But you don't have to care about any of them to appreciate her artistry. She edits video with stark, gray, hand-rendered graphics washed through with great waves of color. It speaks to the longing of fans to be part of a show.
I mean, we all speak the language of television. We all know the basic symbolism that, you know, rain means redemption, open window means a new choice, an opportunity.
Lim says she's mastered the language of television better than the media companies that put pressure on vidders.
The media seem to think that they own the things that they've pumped into my brain for 27 years. It seems to me so ludicrous. The television spent so much time and so much money carefully colonizing my mind.
It's her mind, she says, and she can't not speak it. One voice in a growing chorus of fans who've discovered they can talk back to their television shows. Netta Ulibi, NPR News.
You're listening to All Things Considered from NPR News.
From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Melissa Bloch.
And I'm Michelle Norris. We have huge, huge news from Hollywood today. Just huge. One giant of television is being toppled by another.
No!
The Simpsons are getting another two seasons on the air, Fox announced today. That will make 22 seasons, breaking the record for the longest-running primetime series that's held by Gunsmoke. That's a big accomplishment for Homer and his family.
You will not be getting a tattoo for Christmas.
Yeah, if you want one, you'll have to pay for it out of your own allowance.
All right!
Homer!
Yellow!
Fox is promising that there will be 493 episodes of dysfunctional Simpson family fun, the other current show that could be in the running for this record, now in its 19th season on NBC, Law and Order.
And now a CD I'd be more than happy to pay full price for. I'm not talking about the soundtrack to Shaft. It's Incredibad, the debut album from the trio called Lonely Island. The Lonely Island guys have known each other since childhood. They all grew up in Berkeley, California. You may know their work from Saturday Night Live. Here with his review is our TV critic, Andrew Wallenstein.
It all began one lazy Sunday.
Wake up in the late afternoon. Call Parnell just to see how he's doing.
Hello,
what up, Parn?
Yo, Sandberg, what's cracking?
You thinking what I'm thinking?
Party up!
Man, it's happening. But first, my hunk of pain.
There was Andy Samberg and fellow cast member Chris Parnell rhyming about eating cupcakes, of all things, and with the intensity of a gangster rap group. If the subject matter wasn't strange enough, there was the sight of two white comedians acting like N.W.A., even though they look straight out of prep school. But when their video Lazy Sunday, Chronicles of Narnia, came out in December 2005, it didn't just establish Samberg as an up-and-comer on SNL. The song took on a whole new life on another up-and-coming cultural force, YouTube. The site was known to few who weren't early adopters at the time, but Lazy Sunday propelled YouTube's breakthrough as a household name and chalked up millions more views than the skit originally earned on NBC. Over 3 years later, Samberg has made enough of his homemade ditties to fill an album. He recorded Incredibad under the auspices of Lonely Island, the website he created 9 years ago to showcase his work with Akiva Schaffer and Yorma Taccone, who are two of SNL's writers. Now, pop song spoofs aren't exactly a fertile genre. Weird Al Yankovic may be its best example, but Lonely Island is operating on a whole other level. Instead of just rewriting current songs, they're crafting hilarious bits out of whole cloth. Lonely Island is particularly fixated on satirizing hip-hop and R&B, as Samberg does with a cameo from singer T-Pain in I'm on a Boat.
Spread wide on the summer bow. Gonna fly this boat to the moon somehow. Like Kevin Garnett, anything is possible.
Rapping about being on a boat is absurd in its own right, but if you've seen the countless hip-hop videos that feature performers rapping about their life on the streets while dancing rather incongruously on yachts, the song is hysterical on a whole other level. Unfortunately, my favorite Lonely Island song is not on the album because they couldn't clear the rights to a piece of music in the song I Ran So Far. It's a ballad in which Samberg declares his love for Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad.
They say true love comes only once in a lifetime. And even though we're from opposite ends of the earth, my heart tells me you're the one for me. Mahmoud, I remember when it started. Saw you on the news, you were hating gays. I was eating food, but I was feeling you. And even though I disagreed with almost everything you said, you ain't wrong to me, so strong to me. You belong to me, like a very hairy Jake Gyllenhaal to me. Mahmoud, out of my chest. My mind says no, but my body says yes.
If lusting after a dictator seems racy, that's nothing compared with some of the other cuts on Incredibad. I can't even mention the R-rated titles of two of the album's biggest hits. No wonder Lonely Island has flourished on the internet, where content standards run at loose to none. Whether Incredibad sells as an album or not, these songs have already earned a pretty significant place in the pop culture pantheon. The first reliable source of entertainment that treated its TV home as little more than a springboard for making a bigger splash online. Maybe they are just a bunch of silly songs, but they'll be remembered for marking the period when momentum shifted between mediums.